DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon.
Hello, everyone. My name is Connor Dillon, and I am back. And I'm never going to give you up, just like internet meme Rick Astley there. I'm back in action, and before I explain where I was, let's go straight to a reader email. One of the emails that one of you sent us from somewhere around the world. I actually don't know where this one came from. But this will kind of get us back on track, let's say. And the email reads, "Dear Spectrum team, although I have to admit that it took me some time to adjust to the English format of the science podcast, I was listening to the German one for years, but suddenly it was obviously canceled, so now we know that this email writer speaks German. I really like the show you're doing. During the last weeks, I've gotten the impression that the shows are being newly uploaded old ones. Are you testing if someone notices?" With a little smiley emoji there. And this is from a guy named Christian. So to Christian and a lot of you out there who might have noticed that some of the older shows were being rerun, this is because I broke a couple of bones in my hand, two metacarpal bones. In fact, I discussed this with Gabe on the show a couple weeks back. What happened was I was playing soccer and went down hard on the ground and broke a couple bones in my hand. They are fixed now. I've got a platinum plate in my hand and a couple of screws in the middle metacarpal bone, and I know a whole lot about how hospitals here in Germany work and sometimes don't, but how they work. Yeah, so I learned a lot. So Christian, the new content is coming. Today is some of it. And as Christian finishes this email, he'd say, "I'd really like to hear more from you and wish you a good start into the week tomorrow." So thank you, Christian, for that email. Another email that kind of got backlogged during these weeks that I was out was from a guy named Aaron. Now, I don't know where Aaron lives. That's not indicated here. He just says that he wrote in because he was concerned that we here at Spectrum were making light of people who have been traumatized by dog attacks. And he continues to write that your reasoning was that it was because of something being generated in the hormones of the person being threatened by the dog and that the dog is reacting to the fear it smells. Aaron says this is an insult to those of us who have been traumatized by dogs and you owe us an apology. So this is the type of email that we take very seriously here. And I went looking back to try to figure out what specifically he was referencing and how Gabe and I may have accidentally insulted people who have been attacked by dogs. I found the clip he was referencing, and this was a case of genuine misunderstanding. I'm going to go ahead and play that clip for you now. This is Gabe and I in a movie theater watching a movie about dogs. The film is called Woof.
This film is not exciting yet.
No, not yet.
Woof, not yet. So as soon as it does get exciting, I'm going to be breathing out isoprene, some kind of organic compound.
Yes.
Look at that. Oh, yeah, right there.
Oh, my. Well, and maybe if we'd been watching more. Look, there's a huge, I think, St. Bernard dog that just tackled one of the
characters. Yeah, he just jumped on this guy and just came out of nowhere.
So that might.
So I squirmed a bit there.
And that might have caused an isoprene spike.
Yeah.
So again, what we're discussing there is the fact that moviegoers, the viewers, the people in the cinema, when they see stimuli on the screen, that provokes them to have an emotional reaction, and it synthesizes a molecule in their bodies called isoprene, which can be breathed out. So the fact that that was a dog film and a dog attack is kind of arbitrary in this case. It could have been an action film. It could have been a romance film. It could have been a comedy. We breathe certain chemicals out when there is emotional tension. And again, that episode in the movie theater was based on research from the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry here in Germany. And that particular study was led by a guy named Jonathan Williams, if you want to look up more on that study. So, Aaron, I hope that answers your question or your concerns. And to all of you out there, please do write in. If you have any questions, comments, random scientific insights, as we sometimes say, go ahead and write us in. We are spectrum@dw.com. We will answer you and we will try to bring your letter on air where it's relevant. So thank you to everyone for writing in, and please keep doing so.
story about a sinner. He used to be a winner who enjoyed a life of prominence and position. But the pressures at the office and his socialite engagements and his selfish wife's fanatical ambition, well, it turned him to the booze and he got mixed up with a floozy. She led him to a life of indecision. The floozy made him spend his dough. She left him lying on Skid Row, a drunken log in some Salvation Army mission.
So a very tragic story there, with booze playing a big role, but not the only role in that man's demise. So in studio with me right now are two of my DW colleagues, Charlie Shield, hello.
Hi, Connor.
And thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yulia Fagin, hello.
Hi, Connor.
So these two DW colleagues are not here without reason. This is the Aktionswoche Alkohol in Germany. This is the Action Week Alkohol. And while that may sound like it's even like in support of alcohol or like, yeah, trying to get more people to drink alcohol. It's in fact the opposite. So this is a week devoted to helping Germans to drink less alcohol. And the reason these two DW colleagues are in here is because you've done self experiments recently with alcohol. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hold that thought. Because before we get there, I was pleasantly surprised by the website of the Aktionswoche Alkohol, the Action Week Alkohol, because they have a quiz. And I thought it was going to be super boring and multiple choice questions that you'd seen before. But this is Das Quiz, as they say in German. And they've done it really, really well. It's interactive. Let's get into Das Quiz. One important thing to know before getting into this is not all answers are wrong. And mm-hmm. some you might have more than one correct answer.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and start the quiz here. I'm clicking start on this interactive video quiz. Now, the listeners are going to hear some sounds at certain points, and we will describe those to you as they come. So the first question, number 1 of 10. An astronaut is celebrating his final evening before the rocket takes off with a bottle of champagne. At midnight, he, in this case, lies down in bed. When is the earliest that he could then fly with a rocket to the moon? Question mark. Now, the answers here, the options, he could do it after a cup of coffee the following morning. He could do it after lunch. He could do it after a hangover breakfast, mm-hmm. as they call it here in Germany. And or he could do it after going to the sauna the following morning.
I would never go to the sauna. Drunk.
I've heard that called an executive brunch or something like that, a corporate brunch, like where you apparently, and this is not based on science as far as I know, where you sweat out some of the alcoholic toxins.
Okay.
This is pseudoscience as far as I'm aware. I just want to make that clear. Yulia, after coffee, after lunch, after a hangover breakfast, or after the sauna?
I'd say coffee is probably too early. I think he should eat something, so I'd say after lunch.
Charlie?
So is the coffee and the breakfast at the same time, and the sauna? It's all in the morning.
I would assume so. I would assume that there's a breakfast and then the sauna.
So a bottle of champagne, and he went to bed after midnight.
At midnight, I believe, yeah.
At midnight. I would say after breakfast.
After this hangover breakfast.
Hangover breakfast.
Okay, we're clicking the fish. It's in the... Okay, so we are seeing the astronaut here. You can probably hear him climbing the ladder, approaching the rocket.
I have a bad feeling about this.
He would die?
No. Well, there was
a
Christian cross on the rocket, but his rocket didn't take off.
Okay.
Did you see that? So he got into a rocket and wasn't allowed to fly. And it says the answer is wrong. 6 hours after a bottle of champagne has been drunk, the alcohol is still in your body, basically. Mm-hmm. So this is also assuming that if he went to bed at midnight, he woke up at 6 a.m. and then had his hangover breakfast. This is very hardworking.
It's way too
early. Hardworking astronaut. Next question. Whose body can process alcohol the worst? We have four options. Grandmas. Men who are in love. Elephants. Or business leaders?
So it's me first?
Well, no, we did that last time. Charlie first.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd think grandmas would have had a lifetime of drinking, so surely they could deal with it quite well. Elephants, never thought of that before. Businessmen? Why?
Stress, possibly. Stress could be a factor in how alcohol is processed in your body.
Okay, I'm going to go with the businessmen.
Julia?
Okay. And women, the business people.
Correct. Businessmen and business leaders, businessmen and women.
I'd say I've seen this this movie where elephants eat kind of rotten fruits and they get really drunk from that.
Fermented fruit.
Yeah. So maybe they can deal with alcohol quite good and they don't drink too much or eat too much fruit. I say men in love.
Okay, so let's try it. Maybe there's a chemical that's released in the body when men are in love that allows them not
Why only men? Yeah, maybe they explain that.
Let's go ahead and click in here. So now we see a man and a woman clinking glasses, drinking together on a date, and her face falls in her food. She's asleep. This is the sound of her sleeping. She's a very she has a very odd sleeping pattern.
Oh, that's wrong.
It's wrong because men have more water in their bodies than women do. As a result, women react more sensitively to alcohol. Mm. And one of the answers that we didn't choose, grandmas, it's the same case, less water in their bodies. They therefore can't deal with alcohol as easily.
Okay.
Third question. What gets bigger the more alcohol you consume? The options are your stomach, your breasts, your penis, or your brain. Julie's laughing.
Imagine your breasts and your penis will get bigger. Or your brain. I say your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sadly true.
Yes. Okay, so that is the correct answer. But I went through this before, and I loved how they deal with the question of the breasts. So I'm going to click the breasts just to see what the answer is here. And here we see four women in bikinis. And they're all kind of like making, you know, funny noises. They're apparently at the beach. We see more and more of them. And now we see a man chugging beer. And his breasts have grown. So there
true.
Is
yeah,
some truth
true, yeah.
to the statement that breasts can get larger if you drink a lot of alcohol. But only with men. Next question. What can you do better if you've had something to drink? The options are snore, sleep through things like noises, I suppose, or fall asleep.
I say fall asleep.
Sleep through.
Okay, so I've taken this test before. I know that falling asleep is one of the correct answers. I don't know if sleeping through things is a correct answer. Let's go ahead and click that one. Okay, so we see a rooster trying to wake someone up. Oh, it says it's wrong. It's saying whoever has had something to drink doesn't sleep as deeply and then sleeps poorly through things. Interesting. Next question. Which medication in combination with alcohol should be taken with care, or the two, you should be careful when using the two? We have potency medications, probably the best one known around the world, Viagra, vitamins, sleeping tablets, or antihistamines or anything against allergies.
I have no experience with potency medication.
Yeah.
I'd say sleeping pills. I mean, you could kill yourself, right?
Yeah, sleeping pills.
Mm-hmm. And this is the correct answer. This is the most dangerous combination of those listed here. And here we see a lot of sheep, now running into a fence. First they were jumping over, and now they've all fallen asleep. Yeah, correct. It's basically saying here in German, I'm kind of translating on the fly, that both the medication and the alcohol, sleeping medications, they can mutually strengthen the other's effect with very deadly consequence. Next question. How many calories in a liter of red wine? Is it the same as a bar of chocolate? Is it as much as in 6 energy drinks? Or is it as much as 3 chicken legs? Charlie.
6 energy drinks?
Yeah, I'd say so too.
Okay.
Probably.
Okay, so we have six energy drinks. We have Energy Man here with a lightning bolt on his chest, rocketing off because of all these energy drinks. He's pounding them now and getting larger and larger. And here's an equally as large human being up on a cloud drinking a bottle of wine. Red wine, I assume. And it says, correct. Six energy drinks have 670 calories. And a liter of red wine has 670 calories. That's a lot.
Depressing.
Yeah. Okay, so which symptoms indicate an addiction to alcohol or alcoholism? One, you can always drink more. Two, your hands shake the longer that you don't drink. Third, you leave or you ignore your interests. Four, you have a red nose.
I think all four answers are correct.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And they are. Let's go ahead and... Actually, the red nose is one that I'd be interested in hearing the official answer for here. So we see a red nose and a glass of wine, and the nose kicks the glass of wine away.
Oh.
Oh.
That was wrong.
That was wrong. Okay, yeah, I had not clicked into that one. So alcohol does open your blood vessels, and you do have blood vessels in your nose, but having a red nose is not an indication of alcoholism.
Okay, but now, it can be.
It can be. Now I see where they're going with this. They mm-hmm. don't want to tell people, hey, if that individual has a red nose, they're an alcoholic. Well, thank you for taking the quiz. And as I said before, both of you have conducted your own self-experiments with alcohol recently. Yulia, I'm going to go to you first. Can you tell us about it?
Actually, I feel like I'm constantly experimenting with alcohol, but the experiment you're talking about is that I haven't had a drink for 3 weeks. I started that in February, the mid of February, after a few weeks of really hard work and lots of white wine. And then I thought, okay, I need to do more sports and I need to drink less. And yeah.
Were you successful?
Yeah.
All 3 weeks, not a drop? You were a teetotaler?
And it was so easy. I didn't expect it to be so easy because I was so, I felt like, oh, geez, maybe I'm addicted. But no, luckily I'm not.
Were there any temptations? I could imagine a birthday party or an event where people are meeting at the bar. Where
yeah, I kind of avoided those get-togethers because I didn't like the idea of me being the only one sitting there with water or maybe Coke or something while all others get drunk and drunker.
And did you notice any difference in how you felt?
Yeah, I definitely I slept better. Like deeper and longer. I felt more energetic. So I did a lot of sports, like every day. And I used to get up at 5:30 in the morning and did my sports session. And then my son woke up and he's a very early riser. So he's very lively in the morning and we talked and made jokes and that was, yeah, I felt much more energetic and relaxed on the other hand.
You said you set a time frame of 3 weeks from the outset, mm-hmm. from the very beginning. Why 3 weeks and what did you do when the 3 weeks ended?
I had a friend that who came over and I thought, okay, that is maybe a good occasion to have a wine, my first wine after 3 weeks. And I was really looking forward to that, but surprisingly, it didn't felt that good as I thought it would be. I don't know how to describe that, but I didn't like the feeling anymore. Mm-hmm. I think I was very used to that kind of a little bit drunken feeling before, but 3 weeks were obviously enough to totally erase that memory from my body and my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it didn't felt that good.
Okay.
But I'm very used to drinking now again. found my way back.
Okay. Charlie, you did something similar?
Yes. So in March, I took a month off drinking as well.
And I'm trying to figure out, did that line up with Lent prior to Easter?
No, it didn't. It just coincided with my return to Germany from spending 6 weeks back home in Australia, having quite a lot of celebrations over summer, and I felt like I'd drunk too much, basically. So I wanted to have some time off.
And were you successful? Was it 4 full weeks?
Yes.
Where you didn't touch a drop.
Mm-hmm.
And were there any temptations, any moments of weakness?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say temptations as much as peer pressure. I did still go out with friends and I stayed up really late and danced, but I didn't drink anything.
How did that feel?
Good. Yeah. I still really enjoyed it. Sometimes I feel like, and this is why I took time off, that I'm just drinking for the sake of it. And so it felt great to, yeah, sort of just be committed to this. And yeah, I felt really good the next day as well.
Yeah, no, I ask because there are a lot of people who say word for word, I can't dance until I've had a few drinks.
No, yeah, not the case with me.
Okay. And so 4 weeks, you just arbitrarily chose 4 weeks.
Yeah, I just thought a whole month would be hopefully long enough for some change and to get the feeling of what it's like to, you know, abstain.
And when those 4 weeks ended, would you say that have you gone back to how you were before? Or has that kind of had a knock-on effect? Has it caused you to continue drinking less than you would have before?
Yeah, I would say that it has had a knock-on effect. I've been drinking less since that month.
And do you plan to repeat that month?
Yeah, I think so.
Yulia?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of positive examples here showing that you too, all of the listeners out there, if you feel like alcohol's disrupting your life in any way, even if it's really minor, that you can take a month off. And the last thing I'd like to say before we sound like, you know, we're all alcoholics here in Germany. In researching this show, I took a look at the data from around the world, and Germany is up there. You can say that there's definitely a culture of drinking in Germany. It's very normal. Here at Deutsche Welle, we have bottles of wine and bottles of beer at lunch. You do see people occasionally having a beer or some wine at lunch. It's not unusual. It's also very cheap compared to a lot of the other countries around the world. So, yeah, Germany is up there in terms of consumption, and hence the Alcohol Action Week, or the Action Week Alcohol here in Germany. Yeah, Charlie and Julia, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Oh, demon alcohol, sad memories I can't recall. Who thought I would say, damn it all and blow it all. Oh, demon alcohol, memories I can't recall.
Slave to demon alcohol. Well, we will move on from alcohol now to a new study that made headlines around the world. It was published in the journal PLOS ONE. And on the line with me right now is one of the two authors of that study. This is Agne Kajetskaite. She's from the WZB Berlin Social Science Center in Berlin, Germany. Agne, scientists have known for a while now that men and women prefer different temperatures in rooms, but you looked into how temperatures in the rooms affect cognition, the way we think. So what exactly did you look at?
So we looked at three different tasks. We had a man and woman perform a math task, a verbal task, and a cognitive reflection task.
So you're trying to test them in all sorts of ways. So
exactly.
12 plus 23 plus 34 and then jumbled letters. What did you find?
So we found that the effects were different for men and women. So women were better and better the warmer it got. So with each increase in the temperature, with each Celsius increase in temperature, they were 1.76% better in the math task and 1.03% better in the verbal task.
So the warmer you make the women, the better they do on these tests.
Yes, on average, yes, they do better and better.
Is there a limit? I mean, you can't.
No, yeah. So the thing is, they become better and better even at the temperatures of 30 Celsius, and this is pretty surprising. Our opinion is that since the experiment takes 1 hour, there's not too much time to get boiled. You know, it's not too hot.
I was going to say 30 degrees Celsius, trying to do the calculation real quickly, is in the 90s, right?
30 is 86 Fahrenheit.
86 Fahrenheit. Thank you.
Yeah.
So this is really warm, but they only got that warm toward the end of the 1 hour?
No, they were warm all the time, but it's just like 1 hour, and they didn't complain about it. So we say like, okay, for 1 hour, females still felt well in that temperature, and worse in the temperature of 16 Celsius, which is in your system, I don't know, 62 or something, Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we say they still feel good in that. But we say that doesn't mean that we should set temperatures in the room at like 90 Fahrenheit. It just means that we need to run longer studies and see how the effects would change if we had like more time in that heat.
And just to go back to the men,
yes,
did they perform as well as the temperatures increased?
No. So for men, the effect was the opposite. They were worse and worse. So they were the best at the cold temperatures, which was like 16, 17 Celsius, which is like 65 Fahrenheit. So they were the best at those temperatures. And as the temperature increased, they became worse and worse and worse. And so, for example, in the math task, women and men were very different at the low temperature. So at 16 Celsius, men were much better than women. But then as the temperature increased, they became more and more similar. And at the end, we had no gender gap in the math task. And for men, the decrease was there, but it was not significant. So for women, the increase is very significant. For men, the decrease is smaller in size and is statistically not significant. So they become worse, but not a lot.
So men get worse as it gets warmer, but not too much worse. But women,
yes, exactly.
But women get a lot better as it gets warmer.
Yes, exactly.
What is the optimal temperature then for, let's say, an office space where you have three women and three men?
Yeah, that we cannot say. So we know from the experiment that women are better at higher temperatures, men are worse at lower temperatures, but it's 1 hour. You know, you don't spend 1 hour in the office. So what we say, okay, we are the first ones to show, and that's the first step. Women are really disadvantaged by too cold temperatures, but we should conduct more research, longer studies, even like field studies, to see what would be the optimal temperature. So we cannot say what's the optimal temperature from this. What we know is that the optimal temperature standards, they were set like in the 60s. There are some papers about that in Nature, Climate Change, and so on. So it was set in the 60s, and it was based on a man who is middle-aged and wearing a suit. So it was based on his metabolic rate, because back then, you know, the offices were men-driven, and those are the standards still.
So I guess you're saying it's time to go back and take a look at the temperatures inside offices to make sure they reflect optimal cognitive conditions for both genders, but also the fact that we dress differently now.
Right, that's true.
So I know you said that you can't really give an optimal temperature, that you're not there yet. But just to be clear, it is fair to say that if one of the two genders should be okay with being slightly less comfortable, it should be the men, right? That would be the optimal situation to have it slightly too warm?
I would imagine that.
For a one-hour cognitive exercise, at least. That's what
exactly.
We can say. Okay.
Yeah, well, that we can say.
Agne, thank you so much for shedding some light on your research, and to all the listeners out there, maybe turn the thermostat just a little bit up. So again, that was Agne Kajetskaite of the WZB Berlin Social Science Center in Berlin, Germany, with that very, very fascinating study there on room temperatures and how men and women perform in varying temperatures cognitively. That's it for our show this week. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or random scientific insights, again, please send them our way. We are spectrum@dw.com. If you'd like more DW science, check us out online. We have tons of stuff that doesn't make it into the show. It's dw.com/science to get to our back page. We're on social media on Facebook under DW Science. We're on Twitter @DW_SciTech. And that's it from me, Connor Dillon. On behalf of me and all of my SciTech colleagues here at Deutsche Welle, have a wonderful week ahead.